If you've visited the UW Arboretum in Madison, you know what a gem we have there. And if you haven't had that opportunity to get there, I am betting there's a good chance after this program that you'll want to be visiting it. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. My guest today, Molly Fifield-Murray. She's the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. And Molly, always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, it's great to be here. Not so bad to be inside right now.
Yeah, it's kind of not the best of days, that's for sure. Well, we've got lots of things that we can talk about relating to native plants, and certainly invite questions again from listeners. If you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in as we talk with Molly. Maybe you incorporate native plants into your landscape. Why or why not? Would you like some advice on native plants for specific growing conditions? That's one thing that we usually talk about when Molly's with us. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Molly, what are the main categories of native plants? Prairie is one, prairie plants, obviously.
Right. Well, it depends on sun conditions and soil conditions mostly. So if you have full sun, good soil, it's a mesic prairie. But mm-hmm. prairies can go anywhere from very, very dry soil on limestone or sand, almost pure sand, to very, very wet soil. And then as shrubs and trees develop shade, and different groups of plants can grow under that. So you go all the way to very, very deep shade, like in a hemlock forest up north.
Mm-hmm. So we've got prairie, we've got woodland, and I guess grasses too.
Well, prairie savannas and wetlands and woodlands, they tried to restore 33 different plant communities at the Arboretum. Some of them were less successful because we're not up north.
Right.
So it's not a boreal forest. And it was hardest, surprisingly, perhaps, on the ground layer plants, because normally Madison doesn't get as much snow as up north, mm-hmm. and the ground layer plants, those little viney things that you see at Trout Lake or some of those places, yeah. need the winter snow.
You know, we should talk again. We haven't talked about the Arboretum in a while, and for those who haven't been there, can you describe it for us, a little background on it?
Well, it was started almost 80 years ago as a teaching and research center for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Of course, it was just the only University of Wisconsin at the time. The area is 1,260 acres, but the city has grown around it, so it's pretty much an urban-bound center now. It has wetlands, prairies, woodlands, all restored. Well, the wetlands are mostly, some of them are restored, mostly remnants, so never really disturbed. And we have a small prairie remnant that was never plowed. Most of the things that you see there now, though, have been planted by university professors and students. The Civilian Conservation Corps was there planting in the 30s. And people think it's a natural area, but it actually is intensely planted and managed.
And a wonderful place to visit.
Well, that's right. And it has always also had 35 acres of horticultural display gardens, mostly woody plants. And right now, the magnolias, which you don't think of as being a Wisconsin tree, are spectacular.
Yeah.
Probably the best I've seen them.
Is that right?
Right. Of course, the rain yesterday and a little bit of wind starts taking down some of the blossoms. I noticed this morning and last night, driving through the streets was like driving through a kaleidoscope, all the buds down on the ground from ashes and maples and other things.
Yeah, it was quite spectacular, actually, mm-hmm. to see. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest, as we talk with her about sustainable gardening with native plants. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call. All 72 counties in Wisconsin experienced drought conditions last year. A lot of us are wondering what impact that might have as a result. What are you seeing at the Arboretum?
Well, the theory is that the drought will continue to affect woody plants, particularly trees such as oak trees, for a number of years. So even though this year we are 5 inches ahead right now in moisture, the fact that they were very, very stressed last year could show up for a number of years. And that's going to happen with weakened conditions, just invites the insects to give them more trouble. So we might see more oak wilt, a few other of the oak fungus diseases have increased just because of last year's drought, not this year's moisture so much.
Yeah, so the woody plants, but the other plants, the natives?
Well, the native plants are very well adapted to the strange conditions we have. You know, last spring was the earliest ever in our phenological records, our records of when things happen. This year is almost nearly the latest for everything. That birds don't pay as much attention, but the plants are blooming later than they ever have. And last year, they were almost a month early.
Isn't that
it's just
unbelievable.
Well, last year was disconcerting. You didn't know what month it was.
Oh, man, I understand that perfectly. And this year, I'm telling you, with the rain, at least around my home, the things just shot up.
The grass got green overnight, and the cool temperatures have kept things blooming longer. We had a couple of warm days, and the warm days coming up this week might accelerate things. But, you know, for instance, the International Lilac Society is having their conference at the Arboretum this week, and there are no lilacs in bloom. The last time they came, the lilacs had finished, so it's been tough to schedule that one.
Oh, man. And frankly, the when the lilacs are in bloom at the Arboretum, it is really, it's a wonderful sight. And smells. The smells and the sights together.
Right.
Oh, what an experience.
Well, from when the magnolias start, which could be April, until the lilacs are done, which is the end of May or early June, you can even see the spectacular blossoms of the magnolias right now from the belt line.
Yeah.
And the lilacs, you don't smell quite that far, but we have the largest collection of crab apples and lilacs, most complete in the country, and so it's quite a thrill.
Yeah, absolutely. Eric in Eau Claire, we'll go to you. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let all the listeners know that I'm down by the Madison area, that in Eau Claire at Beaver Creek Reserve, Saturday, May 11th from 8:30 until 1, we're having our native plant sale with over 40 species of flowers, sedges, and shrubs.
Wow.
Yes. Well, this is the Saturday for plant sales because the Friends of the Arboretum's plant sale is also Saturday from 9 to 2, and others in the city are having plant sales, I know, also.
So that's wonderful. So once again, Eric, the sale takes place at?
At Beaver Creek Reserve. It's 10 miles east of Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and 4 miles north of Fall Creek.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, at the Arboretum, lots of opportunities here to purchase plants.
Right. So the Friends of the Arboretum have been doing this plant sale for probably 20 years, something like that, and they have hundreds of plants, obviously a great big tent set up on near the visitor center. Plants have been coming in all week. It's quite a fundraiser for them. It's very important to their budget, and it also allows people to get plants you can't find at the local shopping mall or something. Mm-hmm. So they're all native plants. They've all been grown by either wildflower gardeners or nurseries. They haven't been dug in the wild or anything, so you can be sure that you're getting good sources. They have great information sheets on each of the plants, and there's also people around to give advice on what goes where.
Yeah, and just plus, it's just kind of fun to be out there.
Right.
Molly Fifield Murray, our guest today, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum. Great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you. Plants, folks who want to incorporate plants and native plants into their landscape, Are there some general recommendations that you have for types of plants?
Well, I think people need to be a little bit familiar with the natural situations that the plants grow in. So it's if you have a an oak-covered backyard with oak shade, it's good to go to an oak woods and see what grows there naturally and then pick out your favorites. You probably wouldn't plant poison ivy, which is a native plant, although it's great for animals. But you would say look at either restored woodland in the Arboretum or New Glarus Woods or some of the other state areas and see what you really like about the oak woodland ground layer and then find those species. Most of them are for sale. The few things that you can't find might be some of the sedges, but more and more of the nurseries are starting to provide those. So you can go find wild geranium, trillium. You can find the spring ephemerals. You can find bloodroot and all those things that you can see in an oak woodland right now.
Yeah, beautiful. Are there some great native plants that do well in all parts of Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. I mean, as I said, there are, oh, you mean one species that can grow anywhere? Or
yeah, or some species that can grow anywhere, yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are some generalists. You know, black-eyed Susan is even popular in horticultural gardens, perennial gardens, so that's an obvious choice. The blue flag iris, if you have a little bit of moisture, can grow lots of places, although there's a native northern species. But there are species that are throughout the state as well as very specified situations.
Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest. We'll take some calls. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234. Join us on this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about sustainable gardening with native plants today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Got a great photo of a native area. I would love to have that up on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can also post a question there as well. Let's turn to Pat in Madison next. Pat, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me on. My question's about trilliums.
Okay.
About maybe 15 years ago, some just came up automatically in my garden, but they never bloom. And I would have thought if they came up on their own, it would probably have been a good spot for them. But they don't bloom. They did bloom 1 year, a couple of years ago, but not since, or before or since. Should I move those to maybe out more into the sun, or should I just leave them be? And if so, when should I move them?
So are you talking about the large white-flowered trillium?
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean Dutchman's breeches.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
That's a little different.
The trilliums look so pretty right now. You know, I've got them on my mind.
Sure. Well, Dutchman's breeches, they don't bloom every year. They need to produce a lot of food the previous year because they are bulb and they are spring ephemeral. So they, you know, they recede into the bulb in a few weeks from now. How much shade are they in?
Well, they get quite a bit of shade later on in the season after the trees leaf out. But you'd think if they came up on their own, you know, I never planted them there, and that was maybe 15 years ago.
Well, of course, they don't choose where their seed gets dispersed. Their seed is dispersed by ants, and the ants carry them around and either they have a little food packet on them called an elaiosome, and the ants carry them around, eat off the food packet, and drop the seed. And so it might not have been planted in the best of places by the ant. They need spring sunshine, and if they're getting spring sunshine, they should bloom.
Yeah.
So I'm a little puzzled. If they're getting spring, sometimes people look at woodland plants and think, oh, this would be great on the north side of my house. But that's not true if they need spring sunshine. There are certainly woodland plants, particularly plants that grow in conifer woodlands that can tolerate the shade of a house. But many of the spring blooming wildflowers can't. So that's another reason I asked you what kind of shade they have. So I'm a little puzzled.
I wonder if I would move them. Now, they're maybe about 4 feet away from where the trilliums are blooming. I wonder if I moved them up closer to there, or at least maybe half of them, because there must be about 40 of them there.
Be worth an experiment, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe that'll get them to bloom.
You could try. They're a tiny little bulb, so you're going to have to mark where they are, and when the leaves turn yellow, you could move them then, or you could wait a little bit and move them in the fall if you have them marked and can find them.
I think I'll move them while I know where they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Pat.
As you get older, your brain gets more like a sieve than a sponge.
Well, it's just
thank you very much.
A big orange marker right where they are that says Dutchman's Breeches. Move them in September. might be good, too.
Brian in Menominee. Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Just a quick question. I'm looking to plant some sort of bush, maybe something that gets 3 to 6 feet tall, and it's under a huge pine tree where it's just all, you know, dry dirt because it's, you know, so shady.
Yes.
What would you suggest?
Well, one option would be the dwarf bush honeysuckle. It's not the hated Asian honeysuckle. It's a native Dyervilla lanicera is its Latin name, and I think it's available in many nurseries. It gets about 3 feet tall. It has arching branches. It's not a spectacular flower, but it arches and has a small yellow flower during the summer, so it's a very nice shrub.
Are those the kind that you can eat, too?
I don't know about eating them.
Oh, okay, because we used to eat those little honeysuckle flowers.
Oh, that's wild columbine frequently.
Oh.
And it's also another common name for that is honeysuckle. Another plant that's not very tall. What part of the state are you from, Menominee? So another one is leatherwood. It's a little bit harder to find in the nurseries. It gets about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. It's very pliable and bendable wood. Blooms very early. It's already finished blooming. Bumblebees find it right away, so it's a good thing to have for the early emerging bumblebees. That's probably going to be harder to find. That's Dirca palustris or leatherwood. And then there's some small versions of the amelanchiers or the service berries. There's a running service berry that spreads, but it's a small shrub that can be in that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, for calling. Appreciate it. And we'll take some more calls here. Leanne in Heartland, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. The Pewaukee River Pet Partnership is having plant sales today, Friday, from 4 to 6, and Saturday, 9 to 2. It's native plants, and it goes pretty fast, so if people are interested, they should go early.
Oh, yeah. You know, it isn't, thanks, Leanne, it isn't that the truth. I mean, you know, you're better off. Don't wait till the end of the day. Get there as early as you possibly can, no matter what the plant sale.
Well, that's true, particularly if you have something very specific that you want. Of course, as the plant sales have matured, they've learned what people want, so they always have lots of Trillium grandiflora, because that's everybody's favorite woodland flower. And they frequently will have things towards the end, and it's also a good time to have more time to talk to some of the experts that are there. So if you're just starting out and you want to learn more, that you can come anytime.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks again, Leanne. Bill in Dubuque, Iowa, it's your turn. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Yes, I don't know if it's a native plant or not, but I have a rhododendron, and I got about 10% of the leaves turned brown and almost black. Is there anything I can spray on it, whatever that is, if it's a fungus or what? Can you tell me anything on that?
Well, I don't know about rhododendron diseases, but I do know that they need acid soil. And if you don't have acid soil, you need to make it more acid. And you can that with a variety of things that you can get at the stores. You can use sulfur to do that, or you can use products that are specifically made for acidifying the soil.
Yeah, well, I was going to say I've added a lot of acid. It's a very acid soil. I have other rhododendrons that grow very well there.
Okay.
But I'm wondering about this one. Seems to be susceptible.
I'm afraid I can't help you with the disease issues.
Yeah.
Ask your local extension agents or call the master gardeners, and they might know what's going on around there.
Yeah, it could well be. I would contact the county extension office and ask to speak to the horticulture specialist or one of the master gardeners. Also, you can go to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic at UW-Madison. If you have if you're online, just go to that site, and you can. Sometimes there are articles or pieces of information up on what's going on, and you might be able to learn something from that. Or often, people will take photos of diseased plants and send them in, and sometimes Brian or one of the people there can sort of figure out what it is from the photo. So that's all worth it. Those are all things worth doing, Bill. And thanks a lot for calling. Again, that's a Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Michelle in Madison. Get to you in just a minute. I did want to mention a Facebook comment from Teresa, who, you know, we haven't talked about burns, but she said we did a burn 2 weeks ago, and in a short time, the grass has started to green up. Doesn't take long, does it?
No, and after a burn, frequently within 10 days, you have to look closely that it was burned, but of course all the thatch is gone. It's been hard to get burns in this spring because of the weather, so you're lucky that you got it in. I haven't been able, I've only gotten one in at home. I burned a short, small area of my oak woods, but I didn't get the prairies burned yet because I have to watch the wind directions. So that's great that you got it in, and yes, it makes quite a difference.
Michelle in Madison, now we turn to you. Thank you for waiting.
I just had a quick question about, we've been living at our current residence for just, a couple of years, and we haven't tackled the yard yet, which is really a disaster. But the problem is that neither one of us are especially, have a green thumb or good with gardening, and I would like to incorporate native plants, because I would like to have, a lawn that's pretty low maintenance, since we're not going to be master gardeners anytime soon. But so I'm wondering about, like, resources to help us plan what we should do. Like, I mean, a book would be okay, but, like, I don't know if there's iPad apps or maybe a service that would come out and not necessarily do all the work. We don't mind doing the work, but we just have no idea where to start.
Well, it depends on how much time you have to pursue this yourself. You can come to classes at the Arboretum. You can join a group called Wild Ones that has lots of good information, as well as people who will help you out and come over as friends and do garden visits. We have a native gardening conference coming up this fall, September. Sunday the 13th, I think, where you can come and take, short seminars and also hear Rich Henderson, who's one of the experts in the area on prairies and savannas. So those are all ways to do it. Right now, we just had the class on prairies last night at the Arboretum. So you can look at our Facebook page or our website to see what else might be coming up. Frequently, we don't have a lot of classes in the summer, but we do have tours every Sunday, and you can start to learn what plants you might be interested in. And by coming on a Sunday tour, they're always at 1 o'clock. They're not always from the visitor center, so it's good to check where they're leaving from. But that's a good way to start to learn. And we also have garden tours every Wednesday. Well, not every Wednesday forever, but every Wednesday until the middle of June. And the next one that's about native plants is on June 12th. And that's going to be be woodland, savanna, and prairie garden tour right around the visitor center. Those start at 7 o'clock. So things like that, resources like that. We have an excellent bookstore with lots of different books. I wouldn't pick out anyone right now. And it also depends on your level of interest and knowledge already.
Mm-hmm. And you might even, the plant sale on Saturday, the Saturday plant sale might be a place to go and just to talk to people.
Sure. Even if you're not going to get anything right away, or you might be inspired to buy a few things, you can talk to people and get an idea. And we have lots of volunteers there who, some of whom have a business as well. So there might be opportunities to meet people.
Okay, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Dolores in Kenosha next. Hi, Dolores.
Oh, hi. I have a question about Indian paintbrush.
Yes.
I have seen it once in my life, and this was 20, 25 years ago on property that my husband's family has on Washington Island. They are on the northeast corner. It's right on the lake. It's designated wetlands by the DNR, although everything's been drier everywhere because the lake level's gone down. It was there that one year. My mother-in-law lived up there for years, doesn't remember ever seeing it. Why just then? What happened to it?
Well, Indian paintbrush is a fascinating plant. It seems to like sandy soil. It also seems to be partially parasitic and needs, I think it's oaks nearby that it needs. So we've had some at the Arboretum. We had a woody plant problem, too many woody plants in Green Prairie that we had a forestry mower come in and take out this spring. So I'm anxious to see what happens to the Indian paintbrush in that situation. Where you are, you might also try to go see Chewaukee Prairie. I believe there's Indian paintbrush there. And so at least you'd get to see it again.
Yeah.
Yes. This is just only once in 30-some years.
Right.
Well, you're nearby. You've got some more.
Yeah.
And that's a fabulous place to visit. And I have a life list plant that I want to see. I don't keep lists, but my mother always talked about trailing arbutus. And I've never seen it myself. And 2 years ago, I was up at the ridges, but I had ankle surgery and had a little scooter, and I couldn't go. I was like within 100 yards of seeing it for the first time ever.
So
I'll have to call up there and see if it's in bloom yet. It's so cool this spring. I imagine it's not blooming yet.
Late.
Well, we all have time.
Yes.
Thanks, Dolores.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Tom in Madison. Hi.
Hello. How could a complete beginner to gardening get started in raising edible native plants in the backyard or some small container like a window box?
Do you have some in mind, or do you not know what's edible?
I don't know anything about gardening or what's edible. I want to get started on that, though. It sounds like a cool idea. I heard a course being given at a technical school in my area once, and I'd like to do it, but I couldn't get to those courses. So how could I get started?
Well, we have a seminar on that some years. I can't remember, and I gave Judith the brochure for the Native Gardening Conference. You could look, Judith, and see if there's a edible natives this fall, but I don't think so. So that's something to you can research online, of course. And some of the nursery catalogs give you lots of lists. I have a list in front of me that talks about bloom time, flower height, sun, shade, ground cover, cut flower, birds, bees, butterflies, whether it's tolerant to walnut. But it doesn't say whether it's edible, so I can't pull it off of my list right here. And I personally don't eat a lot of wild plants. I just have never been one to encourage foraging. Of course, ramps you can buy at farmers markets, and that's wild leeks. Certainly the fruits are wonderful, even some that you wouldn't think were wonderful, like black chokeberry is very popular now because of its antioxidants. So, and obviously the Native Americans used the plants that were available. I think that one of the things that they ate which is very surprising, is spring beauties. They're a tiny little spring ephemeral, and I don't know if they ate the greens because it's the first green thing that was edible in spring, or whether they eat the bulbs, and they're a tiny little plant, but of course there's thousands of them in the woods. And of course, sometimes they were eating buds of different trees, so there's a lot to learn. I think there's probably books on it, and Judith tells us there's no edible session this fall at our workshop. Sorry. If you would contact me, send me an email at the Arboretum or put a question on our Facebook page, I'll connect you with our instructor of edible plants.
Oh, cool. Molly Fifield Murray, our guest today, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum. And of course, actually, we've got I'm sure we have a link. Yes, we do. We have a link to the Arboretum on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So, Dom, you just want to go there, link in, you're going to be quickly in touch with Molly. Cindy in Antioch, Illinois, let's turn to you now. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I'd like to let you know that the members of the Antioch Garden Club, just south of the Wisconsin border in Antioch, Illinois, will be having their plant sale next Saturday, May 18th, from 10 till 1. And they can get more information about our woodland ground covers and herbs, such as bloodroot, Jack in the Pulpit, Virginia bluebells, on our website at antiochgardenclub.org.
Very cool. And that's the
18th. Saturday the 18th from 10 till 1.
All right.
So if they don't find it this weekend, they can go look next weekend. That's great.
Absolutely.
This weekend.
Thanks, Cindy.
Oh, thanks for letting me announce that.
And
that brings up one thing to me real quickly is that not everything that's green in the woods is edible. And in past years, we've had some people collecting plants in the arboretum, which is, of course, not allowed. But they were collecting plants for greens. And some of the wild herbs are not edible at all. And some of them are only edible if you wash them like 7 times and boil them because they have oxalic crystals in them. And so they don't have a poison in them, but they lacerate your throat. So it's something to be very careful about foraging is, and as well as, you know, take somebody who knows, don't pick something that you don't know. It's not quite as scary as mushroom picking, but it can be. There are plants out there that are not safe to eat.
Jerry Davis sent me a photo of some morel mushrooms, very, very small ones that he found in the woods. So that, probably the next week or so, they should be coming on.
Right, and I asked somebody once how you told the difference between morels and false morels, and they didn't know, so I didn't want to go hunting with them. And, you know, it's interesting. There was a wonderful nature writer who talked about his dog liking to eat mushrooms, and he wondered if that would ever be a problem. And his dog died because it ate an Amanita, which is the death angel.
Yeah.
And the dog was just running through the woods, you know, picking at them, thought it was fun, I guess, or mushy or whatever, and it didn't work that time.
We have an email from Diana in Cornucopia who has a wet, almost boggy area that currently has a lot of sedge. I've planted a blue flag, marsh marigold, and need more ideas. It's also a source for bog rosemary, bog laurel, and leatherleaf.
Where's Cornucopia, Larry? You know the whole state.
It's north.
Right? Okay.
It's pretty far north.
Well, Becky Brown in Washburn has a plant nursery, and I would suggest trying to get in contact with her. If she doesn't have it, she's going to know some of the northern growers who would be able to connect you with the right people.
Okay. Thank you, Chris in Green Bay, for calling. Hello.
Hi, thank you. Say, a couple of years ago, I wanted to try the prairie rose and start them by seeds that I got from the prairie nursery. I've had no luck 2 years in a row getting them to grow. Is there any unique trick or certain condition I'm missing?
So these are purchased seeds?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I don't know specifically for the specific rose. There's a few species of rose, and they might have slightly different characteristics. Some of these things need to be soaked. And usually the nurseries give you instructions, which I would recommend following, on how long they need to be in damp, like peat moss or sand, in the refrigerator to help them break dormancy.
Yep.
And then once that happens, if you do that and plant them out, then you need to make sure they continue to have moisture, because you've encouraged them to think that it's a moisture-rich spring. Of course, this year is, but last year wasn't. So
yeah,
it was hard to get anything maintained last year. If it was, you know, we planted some things, they were not near the house. We had to remember to go look at them. And even if you watered them once a week, wasn't enough sometimes last year. So last year was tough.
Maybe that was it.
Could be.
Yeah, it could well be.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Chris. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Program Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison, as we visit with her about sustainable gardening with native plants. I'm Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk as we visit about sustainable gardening with native plants. Our guest, Molly Fifield-Murray, from the UW Arboretum, Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for listening in. If you have a question, give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. And we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Well, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Lucy emailed us looking for some advice on natives for their lot in the southern Kettle Moraine area. She says we have a gravelly esker facing east that we've cleared of buckthorn and honeysuckle with some shade and some sunny areas. We'd like to plant some native shrub and plants. Any ideas?
Well, what a wonderful opportunity to enrich and diversify an area.
Yeah.
Savanna and prairie. I'm thinking that her shade is probably oak shade, and with gravelly soil, the natives will have an advantage. Sometimes I'd rather plant in poor soil than in good soil. Mm-hmm. Don't have to compete with as many weeds. So some of the shrubs that come to mind are, of course, the dogwoods, gray dogwood, but it spreads quite a bit, particularly in a wild area. But its fruit is very important for migrating birds. Another shrub you think of for savannas and partially open areas is hazelnut. You frequently don't get to eat them because mm-hmm. the squirrels get there first, and they're smaller than the European hazelnuts, but they have beautiful fall color, get about 6 feet tall, very brushy shrub. There's witch hazel, which gets pretty tall, needs a little more shade. There are the amelanchier species that I mentioned earlier. There's shrub varieties of those, which are beautiful to have in the woods. One that you see in nurseries that's also a native is ninebark. It has a exfoliating bark, so it sort of looks a little rough sometimes, but it's sort of fun and has nice fall color too. I mentioned earlier the aronia, or the black chokeberry, which is becoming popular for people who want antioxidants in their fruit. It's also a very pretty plant, and it's a strange name for something that's edible, but chokeberry. There's choke cherries, there's wild plums, so there's lots of variety of shrubs to choose from. And then when you're looking at the native ground layer species, once again, go to prairies and savannas and look at what you are most fond of, and pick some of those out as the species you start with.
Keith in Dubuque, Iowa, will turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have six plants in my yard that come up every year by themselves, and they never, ever have bloomed, ever. So just yesterday, I happened to take a couple of the we'll call it a leaf, but it's a long, almost looks like a palm on it, let's say.
Yes.
I took it out to the Dubuque Arboretum and talked to four different people out there, and their best guess is this is some kind of a daylily, but they could not even come up with why these things never bloom. So I listened to your program almost constantly as I travel for work, and I thought, oh, I'll bet that lady might know.
Oh, dang. Sorry to disappoint you. Daylilies aren't native, but they do naturalize sometimes, and I don't know why they wouldn't be blooming. They need sun.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say, how much shade do you have?
Yeah, if they've come up someplace where there's not enough sun, that might be limiting their bloom times.
That's very possible, because I've never gotten a single bloom, and these are actually planted alongside of a screened-in porch, and it's usually not sunny there.
They need the sun. Yep. Yeah.
I bet if you moved them into a full sun area, you would you could well get some bloom.
Yes.
There you go. Thanks, Keith, for calling. And Rebecca in Wauwatosa, on to you now. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, great. This is to address an earlier caller who was wanting to learn how to raise edible plants. And one of my favorites, after many years of experimenting and looking around, is lamb's quarters, Chenopodium species.
Yeah.
If you've ever eaten it, it tastes exactly like spinach. And when it grows, it is rank, abundant for the most part, and you find it everywhere. It's a very weedy species, but it's absolutely delicious.
Well, you know, that's interesting. Lamb's quarters and some other of the plants that we find in our gardens and considered weeds were actually brought here on purpose. Lamb's quarters is native south of here, and Native Americans brought it, probably one of the first agricultural plants in the area before corn, squash, and beans. So they find it around Native American habitation sites thousands of years ago, and it does grow in your garden. It does taste like spinach. It's like fuzzy spinach, though,
yeah.
So it's a little hard to get used to.
Well, I beg to differ.
Okay.
If you pick it at the right time and, you know, cook it like spinach, you know, the older it gets, it, you know, develops other qualities, but the younger. But I just really like it. And the person who was on air right before me was talking about daylilies, which also have a wonderful, when the flowers are still in the bud stage, you can pick those and stir fry them, and they are delicious too. Yeah.
Yes. I've had them both stir fried and in tempura years ago. There are a lot of plants that are edible. It's really good to know which ones they are. Portulaca, which also you'll find in your garden as a weed, is edible. Dandelions were brought over as edible plants, as was garlic mustard. And dandelions still, the old recipes I've seen call for a lot of bacon and onions with them, but they very full of vitamin C.
Ah.
Well, and lamb's quarters and daylilies are easy to get to. They produce large quantities. It's not like digging up spring beauty bulbs.
Right. Yes.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate the call. We are talking today with Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. I wanted to mention that next week, Friday, Judith and I will be in Bayfield, and this is sort of gotten to be an annual event. We'll be up to kick off Bayfield in Bloom, so we'll be broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion, 11 o'clock, on from 11 to 12:30, but come early. If you're in the area, I hope you'll come by, because We've got lots of vendors will be there at the pavilion, and there will be some food there. There's some information tables. The DNR, I know, will be there and set up, among other companies. There are several organizations that are going to be there, and it's always a lot of fun. We just have a great time. So that's next Friday from the Bayfield Pavilion, Bayfield, Wisconsin, 11 to 12:30, Bayfield and Bloom. Doesn't cost anything to come. Just come early, browse around. We'll be there to talk with you beforehand and after as well. So hope you can make it. And I want to go to Diane and Woodruff next. Diane, thank you for calling. Hi.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking for some ideas. I want to start a prairie garden with native plants alongside my house. It's like a 30 by 15 area, very sandy and dry, with pine trees and a lot of sun. Just looking for some ideas on, do I need something to do to the soil? What kind of plants will work there? Any ideas?
Well, sure. Actually, as I mentioned just a little bit ago, I like poor soil for native mm-hmm. plants because some of them are adapted to that situation. So you would look around you to find an area that you like and try to replicate it. Things that I can think of would be little blue stem as a grass. It's gets maybe 3 feet tall. Also, side oats grama grass is not too tall. And since you said close to the house, I would stay with some shorter things. And then the wildflowers, you know, you'll want to think about trying to get at least 15 or so different species of wildflowers just so that you have enough diversity in case something doesn't have a good year. And you want to look for planting things that will bloom throughout the season. So look for some of the early blooming plants like passiflower or prairie smoke that will start out the season and then make a list or a chart that has something coming into bloom every couple of weeks. So you would look, you know, maybe for a phlox and spiderwort in early June, and you'd, you know, by fall you'd be in asters and goldenrods. And so looking for things, you know, at the Arboretum we have 14 species coming into bloom in the prairies every week. So if you don't come to visit for a couple of weeks, you're seeing something brand new for sure. You don't want 200 species in your prairie garden, but you can certainly have something different all the time.
And which one of those are? Do all of them spread pretty fast? How does that work? Especially the grasses.
Well, the grasses take a while to mature. All prairie plants are perennials, so they take a little while to mature. If you want something really spreading quickly, you'd go with something biennial like black-eyed Susan. Or evening primrose would be something that would grow in that situation. So you could mix, if you're planting by seed, you could mix it up so some things will grow quickly and bloom quickly and other things will take longer to establish.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thanks very much for calling. You mentioned little blue stem, and I was thinking, we had a program on a week or so ago. The subject came up of back in the days when the settlers were going across the country in the wagons, and the big blue stem fields, they would literally get disoriented because it was so they couldn't see.
Right. I mean, it's frequently this year. I wouldn't be surprised, particularly you know for that person who got their burn in, that it's way over your head. And if you're on horseback, you could see. But what most of the pioneers were walking, and you could lose children, dogs, and pigs out in the prairie.
Oh man, Don wondered if ants move bloodroot seeds. They show up in the most unusual places.
Yes, a lot of the woodland wildflowers have what is called an elaiosome, and they are moved around by ants. Even some prairie wildflowers are moved by ants, and that's why you see them scattered around.
And with somebody was you mentioned pasque flowers, and we had a Facebook comment from Julie who said the pasque flowers bloomed late this year as well. She said she saw the first bud just after April 22nd.
Yes, and April 4th is about the earliest, not counting last year, which I think we have to consider an anomaly. But Yes, everything has been very, very late.
And just to mention again on Saturday, from 9 to 2, we've got the big plant sale at the Arboretum.
That's right. Native plants and shrubs for all situations. Great fundraiser for the Friends of the Arboretum. Come on out.
And that is from 9 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. There's a big, large tent right next to the Arboretum Visitor Center. So there's a great opportunity to see the native grasses, the woodland, the prairie and savanna plants, the trees and the shrub. It's all going to be there.
That's right.
Molly Fifield Murray is the Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. It's always a pleasure to have her on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Native plants make so much sense in a garden. They're beautiful to look at. They come back year after year. They can stand the extremes that our climate throws at them. And while some may not have emerged completely unscathed from last year's drought, they certainly seem to have been more resilient than the non-natives. Larry Mueller here, my guest Molly Fifield Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. She always has great information to share about using native plants effectively. And Molly, great to have you with us again.
Yeah, it's great fun.
It's great fun. I wanted to mention a couple of events. Tomorrow, there's a UW Family Gardening Day at the University of Wisconsin campus at the D.C. Smith Greenhouses and Allen Centennial Gardens. They're going to have free vegetable transplants. You can try out some ergonomic tools that can make gardening and kind of a lifelong activity for everybody. You can get some gardening advice from the Master Gardener volunteers, find some ideas for gardening in limited spaces, and the kids can make a living locket or terrarium. Got free parking right there. Go to science.wisc.edu for more information. But it's tomorrow from 10 in the morning to 2. Lots of highlights there. And also tomorrow from 10 to 2, Troy Greenhouse. There's the Troy Farm Spring Plant Sale, the Troy Greenhouse parking lot. All plants are certified organic. They do a wonderful job as well. A great opportunity there at the Troy Greenhouse parking lot on Troy Drive in Madison. And, of course, we've also got your plant sale.
That's right. A big fundraiser for the Friends of the Arboretum from 9 to 2 tomorrow for native plants. No vegetables.
But you can get some native plants there. Then maybe you run over to the UW Family Gardening Day. You can make a quite a day out of visiting plant sales tomorrow.
Right. And then take the week off to plant them.
That's right. You can join in with your questions or comments as we talk native plants with Molly at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And I think we've already had some photos. Yeah, some nice photo there. Some passflower.
Yes.
And what do we got here? Oh, Teresa sent. There's a photo of their burn that was 2 weeks ago, and you can hardly tell.
Right. You can tell because the thatch has gone in between the plants, but the plants have responded wonderfully.
Yeah, it looks just beautiful, Teresa. Dan in Fond du Lac, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. A question. I've got some linden trees, and I cut one of them down, but even before I cut that one down, I've been getting some shoots coming up into my wildflowers and grasses that I planted, and I'd like to eradicate those. But I've cut them with my lawn tractor, and they just keep on coming back up year after year.
Yes, that's their job.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, basswood does sucker, usually fairly close to the parent tree. So you could also have some seedlings coming out. But that's what they do. And I would be very careful about using an herbicide or anything on a sucker because you might damage the parent if you don't want to damage the parent.
Well, I don't care. A couple of them that are cut down already, but the suckers are still coming out.
Yes.
Or the shoots, whatever you want to call them. So if I do, the problem is there's hundreds, you know, and they're going into my wildflowers. Well, I can't use a herbicide and because then I'll kill the wildflowers.
Yes. Well, so cutting down the parent it probably encouraged the suckering, and I guess I just have to say keep cutting and maybe pick one to become a tree, and it would start maybe using some of that energy that's going to the suckering.
Yeah.
I'm just inventing that in my head right now. So,
I were to make a cut, now the tree, one of the trees that I cut, it's been a couple of years. If I make a slit in that tree and then pour some herbicide into that, would that kill those suckers too?
Well, it might. If that tree is suckering right near the trunk itself, mm-hmm. and you know, you almost always see basswoods with multiple trunks, and that's the suckering that's going on. And so you can try treating right at the parent tree, make a new cut, and put Roundup or glyphosate or some of those other woody plant specific.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll give that a try.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Susan in Madison, hi, thank you for calling. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I was listening to the radio.
What can we do for you?
I have a question about a box elder tree that volunteered in my residential landscape. And I've been told that it should be removed, that it's a nuisance weed tree. And secondly, do box elder trees attract or sustain box elder bugs?
Yes, they do.
hence the name. Well, box elders are frequently considered weedy trees. They have a natural niche, of course, in the woodlands, but that natural niche is not exactly the home landscape. And so if you have other alternative shades, shade opportunities from other species, getting rid of the box elder is probably something you want to choose to do, particularly if the box elder bugs are a bother. I mean, they can be a bother even if you don't have box elder trees, but the box elder tree itself is okay to get rid of.
No doubt about that. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 with your questions or comments as we talk about sustainable gardening with native plants. Molly Fifield Murray, our guest today, getting started in with plants. A fair amount of work to get started with native plants.
Getting started is similar to any kind of gardening and knowing the conditions, soil conditions, the slope of the area, what direction it faces, or that's called the aspect. So if it's south-facing or east-facing, is it near a street or a driveway? Is it going to get salt? Finding out the conditions. And then in native landscaping, what you do is try to match the conditions to a natural community. So if you have partial shade, you look to natural communities with partial shade, like oak savannas. If you have deep shade, then you look for a deep shade natural community, and then you choose your palette of species from that natural community and choose your favorites, of course. And mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, I like to try to get things that bloom throughout the year, which is a little harder in some of the woodlands than in the prairies, but getting started is getting to know the natural communities and getting to know your site.
You know, by the way, we had a Facebook comment from Bill. Arbutus are just starting to bloom in Rhinelander areas. They are very common in the Rhinelander area. So that's...
Well, thank you, Bill. I'll have to find a way to get up north and see them. You know, I don't keep lists. Phenology is a very fun thing to do when you have native plants. And phenology is keeping track of when things bloom every year and looking at the same ones. And I like to see the birds coming back, but I don't keep life lists or mm-hmm. anything. But I'm just, my mother loved that plant so much. So thank you very much. You're very sweet to bring that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And again, you can reach us, a lot of callers online here, at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Walt in West Bend next. Hi, Walt.
Oh, hello.
What's on your mind?
My mind is on box elder trees again, but my mind is on very young box elder trees, shoots like 8-10 feet tall. And I have an area of about, I want to say 50 by 50. It's in a little gully of all these box elder shoots, young trees, and I cut them down about 3 years ago, and I thought, wow, this is really nice. And I painted all those little roots, all the little stumps with Roundup, thinking, I don't want these things coming back. However, they came back even more dense and stronger.
Well, so sometimes the time of year is important. If the plant is, I wouldn't cut box elder in the spring when the sap is rising and the plant has not greened out very much yet or has just greened out. I would wait until the plant is transporting down into the root system to put any herbicide on it. You can try it any time of year, but you're going to have better luck if the plant is strongly growing and transporting, will transport the poisons down into the root system. So sometimes when it doesn't work, it means that we just did it at the wrong time of year. Sometimes it means we didn't use a strong enough solution. Sometimes it means it rained in 2 hours and washed it off.
Yeah, so once it's, full leafed out and,
Yeah, fully leafed out and transporting. We still do treat things in the winter because the poisons will get transported down in, get absorbed at least, but... I think right now would probably not be a good time to work on them.
Thanks, Walt. Roxanne and Frederick, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I have a comment on the box elders. I know people don't really care for the bugs that well. They really don't hurt anything, though, and they can be kind of a pain. But it's been my understanding that there is a migratory bird that the only way that it can get back to its natural habitat is to subsist on the box elder. Do you know anything about that?
Evening grosbeaks.
I don't know that any bird is that specific. I don't know that it's that specific. It could be. That still doesn't mean you have to have it in your yard. But
no, that's true.
But that it could be that something is that finely tuned to a specific bug. But usually, any bug will do.
And I think the evening grosbeaks, they prefer them, but they don't entirely need them to subsist, to live on. But they certainly prefer them. You're right about that.
Okay. Well, I just, the box elders always get a really bad rap. And,
yeah.
I too have a house that they crawl all over the siding and whatever, but... they aren't as obnoxious as the Japanese beetles or other things. So.
Yeah. Well, and they're not harmful to the plants. I have objected to the 500 of them that have been in my office all winter, and they don't taste very good in your coffee. But I think...
That's probably true, too.
You know, it's true of any of these plants that anything that's in a place that you don't want it is to you obnoxious or mm-hmm. a weed or something. But... particularly with native plants, they have a role in the ecosystem, and we might not always know what the role is. So you're good to bring this up and to have us think about the rest of the ecosystem and not just ourselves.
Yeah. Thank you, Roxanne. Joy in West Bend, hello to you.
Hi. When you were talking about sale of flowers this weekend. I just wanted to put in a plug for our wildflower sale in West Bend. We have a city park named Lac La Ronde, and there is a group of volunteers who mostly they dig up plants in their own yards. So they sell wildflowers for the sun area, wildflowers for shady area, other perennials for your flower gardens, some even bushes, and once in a while there's trees. Some people make trellises out of branches and sell them. There's a lot of volunteers there. It's set up like a nursery with wagons and carts and people to help you, people to answer questions. They even put tags on some of the plants that show what they look like in bloom or tell you how to care for them. And it's all for the benefit of our Lac La Ronde Nature Conservancy. If you drive on Highway 33, you know, it's an east-west road in West Bend, you would see some signs that direct you to where the sale is. It's from 9 in the morning till 1 o'clock, I believe, on Saturday.
That's okay, tomorrow.
And what I do is go and buy myself something for Mother's Day.
Good for you, Joy.
That's great.
I'm telling you, Molly, you're not going to have to go very far, no matter where you are in the state, apparently, to get a plant sale tomorrow.
Well, isn't that great?
Yeah.
When we started doing this, 20, 30 years ago, or when the Arboretum started 80 years ago, it's just gratifying. And you can just think that how pleased Lori Otto is smiling down.
Yeah.
And the people that I started with, when it was a struggle to even get to be able to do any of this, and it was very hard to find these plants growing, no nurseries. It was tough at the beginning, and it's just very gratifying and wonderful to have these many people involved.
Melanie in Plover, hello, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I'm wondering how I can take part of my lawn and return it to a natural wooded area.
Well, I'm going to guess that you have sandy soil.
Very sandy.
Yes. And do you have trees already?
Yeah, part of the yard is wooded, but we want to extend that and, you know, mow a little less.
Okay. So a couple ways to do it is to, because of the trees, you don't want to till it up or plow it up or anything. One way to do it is to burn it and plant seed afterwards. Another way is to cover it with some kind of mulch and plant plants into the mulch, the native plants that you want growing into the mulch. So that's more intensive. Burning is harder in some ways. It can be scary in a dry pine woods kind of place. So if you don't want to do that, you could... I would not let it grow without having some native things to put in there, unless you think it has not been disturbed before. But if it's been disturbed, if you let it grow, it's just going to grow into a weedy lawn as opposed to a native restored area. Does that make sense?
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dave in Wausau wanted to share that he saw some wonderful blooming natives at Powers Bluff County Park in Wood County. So a kind of a nice place to go. And obviously, head out to the... What are you going to see at the Arboretum right now?
Well, the woodland wildflowers are still blooming, although some have lost their petals in the rain. Bellwort, which is a yellow flower that hangs down, is in bloom. Few Dutchman's breeches still in bloom. Bloodroot and the twin leaf have lost their leaves mostly. Some still toothwort. Past flowers and prairie smoke, but the prairies haven't really gotten going very strongly.
Yeah.
So the service berries are in full bloom. They're quite pretty, both in the horticulture area and the natural areas.
It's service berries in our lawn area at our past home, but never get them to flower. And I think it was just too much shade.
Yes, they do need You see them on the edges of woods or in savannas.
Yeah, absolutely. We had, we've had some questions about identifying edible natives. That's come up more than once on the show today, and I did want to go mention that both Stan DeKella and Sam Thayer have great books for not only identifying edible natives, but they also provide examples of harmful lookalikes. And so there's a couple of books. Stan DeKella, and his last name is spelled T-E-K-I-E-L-A. So that's always, people say, how's that spelled? T-E-K-I-E-L-A. And then Sam Thayer. Both of them have books on edible natives. You know, it's something I've never really gotten into it myself, other than morel mushrooms. I'm a fraidy cat, and I haven't studied it well enough, and I guess I wouldn't go unless I went with somebody like Stan DeKella or Sam Thayer.
Right. And there, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, there were edible plant movement and lots of books written about it, and that comes up now and again. I think if you're growing them yourself, that's okay, but I'm a little worried about foraging, how detrimental that could be in, and of course, not acceptable in state parks or at the Arboretum or places like that.
I wanted to go back to the Arboretum, speaking of that, because there's day camps.
Right.
Could you talk a little bit about what those are?
We have a program in the summer for kids both learning together with adult coming with them and clear up into middle school to grades 6 to 8. So both young explorers with your kindergartners and first graders, we divide them up by ages, and we have some wonderful topics. You know, for the youngest kids, it's just discovering things.
Sure.
But, of course, Potter Mania is already full that session, the science behind the magic. But Arboretum Archaeology, Nature Through Art and Games, young naturalists in 4th and 8th grade through 8th grade can be looking into patterns in nature, such as hexagons, spirals, and the Fibonacci sequence. And eco-trekkers are for older kids, and they often do some really neat things. And one of the things they're going to do is Arboretum Archaeology, which studying the effigy mounds and how Native Americans used the Arboretum ever since the glacier was here. So
always something great out there. Molly, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Molly Fifield-Murray, Outreach Programs Manager for the UW Arboretum in Madison. Don't forget the sale tomorrow from 9 to 2 p.m. at the Arboretum Visitor Center and all the big tents right next to it. And thank you all for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.